This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 044.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. We just had a great conversation with Juan Sebastian Orihuela. You can find him on Instagram at juancho.thestudentvet or his nonprofit organization that he started, the Latinx Veterinary Medical Association, which is on Instagram at LatinxVet. But before we dive into that more, how are you doing, Jonathan?
So, you know what? Somebody made the comment the other day, because people that have known us for a long time, that it just sounds strange when you call me Jonathan. And yes, that is my given name. It is the name I was born with. Mike, you've been calling me Johnny since the beginning of time. And I just heard it right now. And I went, that's hilarious. It comes out again.
I flip-flop. I mean, I want to go Johnny. Johnny's in my heart. But sometimes I'm like, oh, we're recording. You got to be formal. Call him Jonathan. But
I'm doing well, buddy. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. I guess to timestamp this, we are recording this on the weekend of Father's Day. And I had a nice little surprise. Rosalie and Riley are surprising me with, we're going water sliding, which is like Riley's most favorite activity in the world. So she came home from daycare yesterday. She had this little like handprint thing that she made for me. And Rosalie told her, we're going water sliding. And so that's all she can talk about for like the last 12 hours is water sliding.
She's losing it.
Yeah.
Or you guys, this is a thing in Calgary. I don't know if it's a thing in Saskatchewan where people will actually like rent hotel rooms again, COVID style, when we could, just prior to COVID style. So you go water sliding together with a few people. Is that what you guys are doing? Or is there a water slide park in Saskatoon inside that you're going to?
We're going to a hotel. Yeah. Some of the local hotels have sort of like stay and play packages. So you okay. get a discount if you actually live in Saskatchewan, because they know people are bored. Everyone's been locked up. They want things to do. So that's been we've done this like three or four times during COVID, is book a hotel room and go water sliding. And Riley's finally old enough. The last time we went, she just had a ball. So today, all afternoon, water slide time.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yep.
Excellent. On the front here, we're back open for business as of July 1st, Canada Day. Really exciting. The province has said they're going to lift 99% of all the health mandates as we just hit our 70% vaccinations on first vaccine. So we're pretty excited about that. Some great times ahead, we're hoping, in terms of this COVID struggle that we've all been in.
Yeah, different. I think Saskatchewan's July 11th, somewhere in there, we're hoping. And then I saw federally the Canadian government moved the border decision back again another month to July 21st. I can't wait till that border opens and quarantine is lifted. I'd love to get down to the States and see some people. That's coming soon.
We have some credits we need to use pretty darn quick. And there's a lot of people in that adage. It's pretty interesting to watch the Vegas Montreal game and the series. So NHL for all those for hockey, and just looking at the full arena in Vegas, just amazing. And everybody cheering. Can't wait for those days to come back. Stampede 2021, a go. But anyways, we digress.
Okay, so Stampede is a go. That's great for this, for the city of Calgary.
It's great for everybody. For Canada, we've got we've got everything a go. It's going to be in a COVID safe manner, whatever that can mean. But yes, it's a go. July 9th.
All right. Well, let's get on with the show. Before I dive into the bio, why don't I kick it over to you for today's quick tip?
Our quick tip, short and sweet, and we're going to have some fun with this. It goes along with our conversation with Juan, a very positive individual, And we speak about this in the interview. Two books as a recommendation today, Think and Grow Rich, which was brought up in our conversation. Napoleon Hill would recommend that to anyone, no matter your age. It's in audiobook format. I remember listening to it in vet school as I biked back and forth to school. There are some great key basic points that set the premise for not just becoming rich. That's the extra effect of all of the baseline habits you put into your life. The second one that I'm going to recommend is actually a recommendation from yours truly, Dr. Michael Bug, who mentioned this. And Mike, talk to me about this law of abundance, because you just said something amazing a couple of minutes ago. What did you tell me?
Yeah, for, I don't know, years, Think and Grow Rich has been my unofficial number one book. If someone says, hey, give me a book on mindset, that's what I say. If you're watching the video, I'm holding it up. It's The Law of Abundance by S.D. Buffington. This is the most underrated book I've ever read in my life. It knocked Think and Grow Rich out of the number one spot, in my opinion. Now, that's just my opinion, but this book is amazing. I don't know if we specifically speak about it directly in the interview with Juan, but we talked about it in his pre-recording and then after the recording was off. And the principles that come up in our conversation with Juan are in these books, in Think and Grow Rich, in The Law of Abundance. Well worth your time to read those. I mean, they are kind of life-changing books if you step into it, and you see that come through in Juan in how he's been so successful.
Yep. Well, I'm going to pick up that book number two. I had not heard of it. And like you said, yep.
Okay.
Well worth read.
All right. Well, diving into today's conversation, it was a fun one. With us today, as I mentioned, was Juan Sebastian Orjuela. Juan was born in Bogota, Colombia, but his family immigrated to St. Paul, Minnesota in the USA when he was 10 years old. Juan attended the University of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where he graduated with a bachelor's in biology and environmental conservation. Currently, Juan is a fourth-year veterinary student at the Ontario Veterinary College in Canada. He is passionate about promoting diversity and inclusion in the veterinary profession. His veterinary interests include ophthalmology, emergency medicine, practice ownership, and taking on other leadership roles. Juan considers himself a student entrepreneur and prides himself on being the co-founder of the Latinx Veterinary Medical Association, a nonprofit organization representing the Latinx community in the veterinary profession. We certainly dive into that in a big way in this conversation. We talk about Juan's journey to vet school and through vet school, and then dive into his co-founding of the Latinx Veterinary Medical Association. So without any further ado, I give you the very soon to be Dr. Juan Sebastian Orjuela. All right, Juan, so good to have you on the podcast. We've been trying to coordinate this for a while, and we were just chatting. We think you're our first veterinary student on the podcast, so welcome.
That's incredible. Thank you so much to the both of you for having me and inviting me to your podcast. Like I told you before, I've been a big fan ever since you guys released your platform, and I'm an avid listener of your podcast, and I've always, you know, said that I wanted to be a part of it, and it was a really honorable thing for you to reach out and want to connect in that way. So thank you guys so much.
Well, you're welcome. I always laugh when people say that, because it goes both ways. I don't think, you know, we're anything special here. When I saw your platform, I think Instagram is the first place I saw you, and this going both ways, it's like, man, this would be a cool guy to have on the show sometime. Took a while to coordinate, but here we are.
Well, you know, he's only into his fourth year of vet school, right? He has nothing to do.
Yeah. I have so much free time, eh?
Tons of free time. Sarcasm kicking in.
And I have to say, I'm sure this will come up later, I've been following your Instagram and watching your stories. And so you're just in your early fourth year of vet school. You're doing various externships. It is so cool seeing your passion and seeing you light up with like a new procedure. I think you did a cow C-section. This is a few weeks ago now. I've seen some dog neuters, and it just like kind of relights me up, because I mean, that stuff's pretty far removed for me, but seeing you go through it and just light up is really incredible.
That's right. I mean, it's been an amazing experience so far. I'm more of a hands-on learner. So after this year of virtual learning, that was really tough for me. So getting out there, interacting with people, learning procedures right from the veterinarian, that's teaching you and mentoring you, it's super valuable to me. And that's how I learned the best. So I've gotten to do a lot of cool procedures. I dove into the large animal world, which I never thought I would be interested in, because I'm streaming small animal. And after that experience, I've just been so intrigued with it that it's made me really question my my journey and the route that I'm to take after I graduate. So yeah, I think fourth year for anybody that's listening out there that's a veterinary student is definitely the one to look forward to, because it's a life changing experience when you're in vet school, just learning from the books and the lectures to jumping onto hands-on work. It brings that passion and that love for veterinary medicine back for sure, because third year makes you lose that.
When you're buried in the books. And I'm laughing again at, I know for me, what you think you're going to do when you enter vet school, when you're in first year, when you're in fourth year, and then what your career actually ends up looking like, it pivots and changes a lot. So I can't wait to follow your entire journey. Let's take a step back here. For those of our listeners who may not know you, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you came to be in vet school and now a fourth year student at OVC.
Sure. So I'm originally from Bogota, Colombia, and my family and I migrated to Minneapolis, Minnesota when I was just about 10 years old. Then we moved to Wisconsin Rapids, which is this very small town in the middle of Wisconsin, 18,000 people. I finished my high school there, and I later moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I attended the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and got my bachelor's degree in biology and conservation and the pre-vet route. There, I was able to pretty much explore the side of veterinary medicine that I've always wanted to, right? I was able to get my first job in emergency medicine as a veterinary assistant. I started the first pre-veterinary club at the University of Milwaukee, which I think was my pride and joy at the time, and really allowed me to network and build those skills that would make me a competitive applicant for a veterinary program. So after I graduated from UWM, I moved to New York, New York City, where I worked as a veterinary technician for about 2 years. During that time, I applied to vet school, and I ended up getting in, which is, you know, the dream. The dream came true. And I also was very fortunate in getting into more than one school, so I had the opportunity to choose. I visited all the campuses. I looked into their programs. I toured OVC, which is the Ontario Veterinary College here in Canada in Guelph, Ontario. Fell in love with the community, fell in love with the curriculum, and just Canada in general is such an amazing country. So I decided to, you know, just make the move. And ever since I've been in Guelph, and now I live in London, Ontario. So I'm quite the traveler. I do see myself as a big world traveler. I've been around throughout my short lifetime, I guess. And I'm all for experiencing new cultures and just seeing new places and kind of enriching myself in that way. So yeah, that's a quick Colts notes on my journey so far.
So I've got a couple of questions if I can jump in, Mike, quickly. It's not often that we see, migrated from Bogota, then into the US, and now into Canada. That's not a normal journey that I've seen for veterinary students. And having also been able to get into multiple vet colleges through your application, why did you choose OVC? Where did that come in?
Right. So I must be in love with the cold winters and the northern culture of North America. But I do really enjoy this area of the world. And you're right. A lot of people would expect you to live more in the Florida, southern part of the U.S. But no, I've always been here, and it's kind of become a part of me. So I'm really happy to be in this area of the world. And as far as OVC, so I got accepted into the Royal Veterinary College in London, or not Ontario, but UK, and Penn State and Michigan State and OBC. I applied to a total of 6 veterinary schools. And the reason I chose OVC, again, it was because of the culture that was presented to me when I visited, right? It was a very small, tight-knit community. OVC has a campus of its own, separated from the main University of Guelph. So it gives you that unique sense of a prestige, right? Everybody in the main campus looks up to the veterinary college. It's an agriculture-based, you know, university. So a lot of those people are like born and bred to become veterinarians or going to agriculture. So walking around with our OVC jackets, you know, and people stopping you and saying like, wow, like, let's take a pic. It's really a unique experience. And I remember when I was visiting, you know, I saw that firsthand and I saw how much of a community there was around this veterinary college. And that's something that I didn't see anywhere else really. That I visited. So that was the biggest player into my decision for choosing OVC. And second, I think was probably the curriculum, or not the curriculum, but the amount of tuition that went into where I was going to be attending veterinary school, because finances are very important to consider. It's not all about like, let's just go to the top veterinary school. It's let's go somewhere where it's going to make sense for us to be able to have a good lifestyle after graduating. And even that, it's still really expensive to go to vet school. So by no means am I paying any less than other people that are attending vet school in the States. But from the options I did have, it was the cheapest option with the best culture and the best community. So,
yeah, I think that's great awareness on the financial piece to be looking ahead, you know, and trying to set yourself up, because financial debt coming out of vet school, you know, with lots of student loans or lines of credit, we see it wears a lot of people down. So good on you to have that foresight, which, I mean, is a common theme it's looking like with you.
Absolutely. And then knowing that and setting yourself up, Juan, I'm going to ask that prospective question post fourth year. If there's not been choices made yet, do you foresee yourself staying in Canada or then having to look elsewhere again related to that finances? And I'm putting you on the spot 5 minutes in, but
no worries. So yeah, that is the question of the hour. I mean, I've been asked that question a lot lately, especially during my externship. I feel like there's a huge need for veterinarians right now in the profession, and all these clinics are struggling to find people to join their team. So it really comes down to, once I start looking into contracts and to finding a place where I'm gonna be after graduation, which will come later on. I haven't been, you know, I haven't crossed that bridge yet. But when I do, I plan to make a spreadsheet to kind of do the pros and cons of staying in Canada versus the US. And the reason why I'm contemplating going back to the US is because my US loans are in US dollar, right? So I'll be very straightforward with you guys. I'll be graduating with about 350,000 US of debt, which is quite a bit. So that being said, if I practice here in Canada, I would be making a Canadian dollar salary, paying back US loans. And on top of that, there's interest, right? So kind of leveraging and seeing what is the best option for me financially, I think is the number one thing that is going to allow me to see where I'm going to end up. And also, I value things like mentorship, right? I don't want to just go to a practice that's going to pay me a boatload of money, a huge salary with a signing bonus or anything like that. I value mentorship and that a lot more, because that's going to be more of value in the future, right? So there's a lot to consider there. I also, you know, I'm in a relationship here in Canada, so it's also considering, you know, me leaving and being in long distance. So there's a lot of factors, and, you know, I guess I'm trying to like not think about it as much right now and just wait till the moment comes. But it's something that I've been kind of, you know, been asked about lately. And I would love to stay in Canada, but who knows? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really important point, again, that we kind of went fast over in analyzing your first placement and comparing finances and mentorship. And I know sometimes people get really attracted by, oh, big signing bonus, that's where I'm going to go, and kind of lose sight of checking those other boxes of like, what's the work culture, what's the mentorship like. So I think that's really important to analyze.
We're right in the middle of this with Mosaic, actually. And every year I've either given talks at the UCVM, which is the University of Calgary Veterinary Medicine, and/or in this last couple of years in a rotation with a couple of my partners, we talk about that ideal contract. I'm going to jump again in a spot because I think, Juan, you can answer this because there's different perspectives out there and we're right in the middle of this within our organization. What is mentorship to you? What does that mean to you? Because people have different definitions, sometimes skewed one way or the other. I would love to get your perspective.
Right. Yeah, there's many definitions. And, you know, I've even dove into that myself with some of the veterinarians that I've been meeting throughout my experience so far. And I think to me, mentorship means somebody that's going to be open to having a relationship with you that is mutually beneficial. It's not just all about you receiving all the information and the skill set from this one individual, but also you being open to taking in that information and showing them that you're willing to learn and that you're willing to advance your knowledge. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship that with the goal of, you know, making you a more skilled, more well-rounded clinician, right? So mentorship for me is somebody that's open to, you know, not afraid to show you how to do a surgical procedure and being open to like kind of watch me do it, let me do one and then you do one and then I'll watch you kind of thing, right? So to me, that's extremely valuable. Somebody that's willing to communicate with you whenever you have concerns, right? So let's say as a veterinary student or as a new grad, if you're, you know, feeling some sort of way about a contract, let's say, or a new job opportunity, you can reach out to that person for advice and that person's going to have your best interest in mind. They're going to, you know, guide you in the right direction. Somebody that wants to help you fulfill those goals that, you know, you may have as an individual, right? So that you want to be a practice owner or you want to be, you know, you want to go into a specialty or anything like that. And they're going to support you the whole way through and give you and provide you with resources to get there. So it's providing those resources. It doesn't have to always be like them giving you something that it's going to take away from them, but like kind of giving you access to their network. And I think networking is a key component in this whole mentorship idea, because networking really opens many doors for you. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize, right? That, you know, just from knowing a certain person, you can get an amazing job or you can meet an amazing mentor or get an amazing opportunity, really. So it's a combination of all those things. And I really don't have like the best, you know, description of what a mentor would be, ideal mentor would be for me. But for me, this is some of those things that I mentioned are the key, most important things that I'm looking for in a mentor, right? Somebody that's willing to watch me succeed with their help and their assistance.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's great. What you said in there about networking, in the short time I've got to know you here, you appear to be a master at it. In our pre-call a few weeks ago, you were talking about how your first year of vet school, you joined all of the clubs and maybe spread yourself a little bit too thin and then started to think about, okay, how can I have more of an impact on the greater veterinary community, not just, you know, my OVC veterinary class? Mm-hmm. And you started to look sort of at outside of it and expand. And the things you're doing is wildly impressive. So tell us a little bit about that journey of, you know, joining all these clubs and then focusing in and then where you kind of landed into your second and third year.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the journey really started prior to vet school, to be honest. You know, for me, getting into this profession was extremely difficult. By no means was it a walk in the park. You know, being somebody that's a minority and somebody that really didn't have a family lineage within the profession, accessibility to mentorship and a network of people that would be able to support me to be able to succeed in this profession, I really had to like self-teach myself a lot of skills. I had to go out of my way to find opportunities. I had to work really hard. You know, my first job was in the third grade walking dogs. From that job, the person that I worked for asked me if I wanted to train her dogs in obedience and in agility. And then through that, I met a breeder who showed dogs in AKC and UKC, some American Eskimos. And she asked me if I wanted a dog. And of course, I wanted a dog. And she said, I'll give you a dog if you show my dogs as a junior handler in AKC and UKC. And I'm like, of course, you know. And by this time, I was pretty new to the U.S. Like, my English was broken. I was still a little kid. And I always had just the idea of, like, I want to be a vet. I met her randomly at a Starbucks, and she asked me, you know, I went to pet her dogs, and she asked me, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I'm like, I want to be a veterinarian. And that's what got me the job, really. And through that job experience, it really opened a huge door for me, which is access to veterinary medicine, because I would go to these dog shows at different parts of the US, in Florida. And then I met veterinarians that were part of this world, right? And then I started talking to these veterinarians and asking them, hey, what do I need to get into vet school? What do you recommend? You know, what is the process like? And they really gave me some great advice. And that was how I was able to formulate what I needed to do to succeed in this profession. So I went ahead and, you know, went into college, university, and with a strong mindset of, like, I'm still going to be a vet and I know what I need to do. I found a job right away as an emergency veterinary technician or assistant, and I worked my way through that. And as I've been in undergrad, you know, I tried to diversify my experience as much as possible, again, to increase the possibility of me getting into a program. So I worked as a lab animal technician at the University of Wisconsin, and I worked as in GP and exotics in New York City and Manhattan, and then I worked in research. So I try to do as much as possible to prove to the program that I was a valid candidate for their program. So that being said, you know, it took a lot of work and determination for me to be able to get to the point that I'm at. So going into veterinary school, you know, I already had understanding of the struggle that I had compared to a lot of my classmates, right? Like I told you, in the University of Guelph, a lot of people are born and bred to go to vet school. Like, a lot of their family members have been veterinarians. They have just that easy access. And I'm not saying everybody, but the majority for sure. So for me, it was always, I want to go into this profession. And if I get into this profession, I want to have an impact that's beyond myself. I want to help other people so they don't have to struggle like I did. And for me, that was, you know, creating something that was maybe innovative, something that was going to change or have an impact all around, not just in my community and veterinary school, but like in veterinary medicine all throughout North America, and sometimes, like, you know, who knows, the world. Like, that, you know, you can never, like, you have to, like, keep dreaming, right? Like, you can never, like, hold yourself back. And that's always been kind of my kind of personality, right? I've always been told, like, you know, find a plan B, or you're going to get into vet school, but that's because you're a minority and they have a quota to fail, or things like that. And for me, that fuels my fire almost, right? I love proving people wrong. So going into vet school, I went in with that mindset, like, I have to do something. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm just going to be open to taking new opportunities, different opportunities, and hopefully they lead me to somewhere that is going to kind of help me shape my future or where I belong in this profession. And that's where my first year, my first summer in veterinary school, there was an opening for this research position for 3D printing in veterinary medicine with Dr. Michelle Oblak, who's a surgical oncologist at OVC. And she was pretty much the first one to do a 3D printed kind of surgical procedure, a craniotomy on this dachshund that went viral. And all of a sudden, she got a lot of attention and grant money to start kind of moving forward with these cool research projects. And I applied, I got accepted with another student. And that was the start of, like, my kind of me going off a different pathway in veterinary medicine right from the start, right? So right away, it was something that intrigued me because it was something that was not just clinical, but it was innovative and entrepreneurial. So I did that program. And the gist of the program was to create an online consortium, which is an online community of veterinary professionals that are interested in using 3D printing technologies in veterinary medicine, and to advance the way we practice medicine, the way we do surgeries, to get us up to speed to human medicine, pretty much, right? Because that's what is lacking in veterinary medicine. So creating the consortium and researching ways to create 3D printed files that were, you know, animal based anatomical structures that we could use for learning purposes in anatomy class or in regular classes for professors to use as teaching tools. And through that experience, you know, I was told to like, here are the rules that you have to kind of, the things you have to create, and then you have to figure out the way of getting to that point, right? So knowing myself, I'm very much, I go out of my way to network. It's all about that networking. So I reached out to the business school at the University of Guelph because they had a makerspace building. A makerspace is for innovation and technology, right? And I had read somewhere that they had a 3D printing machine. So I'm like, perfect. Like, they know how to 3D print. They can teach me how to 3D print. And maybe they have all the resources that I can utilize to make this research project valid and to complete all of the requirements that were presented to me. So I reach out a quick email like, hey, this is my project. This is what I'm doing. Can we meet? Is it possible for you to give us access to your 3D printing machine and kind of teach us on how to 3D print? And they were very receptive, right? It was the summer, so there's not a lot of students on campus. And they were like, of course, let's meet. Let's get this done, and let's learn a little bit more about what you're doing. So through that experience, I ended up meeting, you know, the head of entrepreneurship for the Lang School of Business at the University of Guelph. So it was just through conversation. I love to talk to people. So I met him and I'm like, oh my God, like, such an honor to meet you. Like, I've always wanted to like have some type of company or like organization. And he just really saw a lot of value in what I was saying. And he said, why don't you apply to this program called the Hub Incubator Program that takes innovative students and turns them into student entrepreneurs, hopefully, right? So I'm like, of course, this sounds amazing. Like, I've always been very business and like entrepreneurial oriented type of person, right? So I always wanted to do something with that, even if I didn't get into vet school. But so I was presented with this opportunity and I was like, of course, let me do this. And then he, you know, approved my application and said that I should go ahead and enter the program with my other research partner. And we agreed to do that. And that's kind of where everything really took off for me in the world of innovation and organization building and entrepreneurship. I was admitted into the program and I did 2 days a week during my first semester of second year of vet school on top of my veterinary curriculum. So I would go to the business schools and then take a class with other student entrepreneurs. And we would have people like the founder of Smokes Poutine come and talk to us and other very prominent names in Canada that have been entrepreneurial, have an entrepreneurial impact and kind of give us advice and give us guidance on how we can achieve our goals. So our project turned out to be, it was called 3D Veterinary Innovation Club. And it was going to be our first club at OVC to kind of teach students the value of 3D printing, the value of innovation and technology, and to kind of just get that bred into our curriculum so people would be more willing to kind of receptive to this new idea. So we were given a $2,000 grant. We established the club. And through that, you know, through all the classes that I took, I gained so much information. I was like, it was a world that I've never been exposed to and so many like new skills that I had learned through this program. And that being said, about 2 months later, I went public with the organization, which is the Latinx Veterinary Medical Association. I would say that this program, the Hub Incubator Program, gave me all of the courage and confidence to be able to say, yes, I had this idea working, you know, since first year of veterinary school. And now I'm able to say that, yeah, let's go public. Let's make this a community, you know, let's do it kind of thing, right? So that's kind of where the organization arose from. And it's really neat to see that. And now we've gone so far with it, so it's awesome.
It's very impressive. When I'm listening to your story, the things that are jumping out to me is you had this real life experience. You talked about the struggles that you experienced, and then that fueled a passion for impact. You said yes to all of these opportunities that kept that you went and sought out, but then they arrive on your doorstep. You said yes to them, compile all of these skills, sort of think outside the box. You're here in a business incubator and you say, wait a minute, my passion is actually this nonprofit organization that's going to have a massive impact on people. And you launch all this in your second year of vet school. And that's the thing that jumps out at me where I'm like, how did you have the courage to do that as a second year vet student? Like, I remember myself was like, just survive, try to pass all the exams, like don't rock the veterinary boat, right? Like just sort of, you know, get along. So can you speak to that? Like that courage to launch a global nonprofit as a veterinary student?
Of course. So I say that my lack of community, the lack of community sense that I felt going through this whole process was the thing that really ignited my want to create this community and provide this community to other people. So this organization, you know, came about when I started my Instagram presence prior to entering vet school, just to create that visibility, right? I never saw anybody that looked like me in the profession. I never saw anybody represented, somebody that I could connect with, being like, hey, that person looks like me. I can be a veterinarian as well, right? So as soon as I started through my undergraduate degree in pre-vet, I was like, I'm going to be that one person that people are going to look and they're going to be, say, he is the Latin guy that's going into veterinary school and he's very sharing his experience. So, you know, that allowed me to start connecting with a lot of people on social media. Social media has a huge power, and I've met a ton, immense amount of people around the world and the US, all that are in the veterinary profession. And that's where I met the other co-founder. We just chatted one day through DMs and we're like, oh, what are you doing? What's your passion? She just graduated from Cornell University. And you know, she was Mexican descent, and she told me, you know, there's like no community for Latin people in the veterinary profession. I'm like, I know, like I looked up communities or different minority associations, and I only found the Black DVM Network, which I think is amazing. And so when I found that organization, I was like, oh my God, there has to be something for Latin or Hispanic individuals in the profession, because we make a large percent of the population, right? Spanish is a prominent language in the US, and there's a huge population of people that are of Latin Hispanic descent. And doing research, I found nothing. Absolutely nothing. So that is when I told her, I'm like, hey, like we should like start like a club, right? Like a club at our schools. I'm all about starting clubs for some reason. And you know, I'm like a club at Cornell and a club at OVC, and maybe we can like start formulating like a community or like gathering a community of people to kind of have this impact. But so we like ended up trading notes. Like I had already typed up some notes. I'm going to talk to my dean. I'm going to see who would be involved in my community at OVC, and then all that stuff. And then she took notes as well. And we just had like very similar ideas, very similar goals. So I was like, let's join forces. Let's do this. Let's create an organization and just be the first ones to fill that gap, because it's needed. It's very much needed. And she agreed. And from then on, we created a group of small animal veterinarians at Cornell and just me from OVC from Canada. And they helped us kind of launch the foundation, I guess, of the organization, right? Creating the bylaws, creating the logo, creating all of kind of the minute details that really are very important for this organization to take off. So, we did that, and you know, it was just kind of building on for like about a year. I did the Hub Incubator program. I got all those new skills. I understood how nonprofit organizations worked, what it took to create a nonprofit organization in Canada, but like not in the US. So I did my own individual research, and then I was like, wow, okay, so I know this, I have this knowledge, I can do this. Like that's what gave me the confidence, right? Like before I was like, let's just keep it into a club. Let's be quiet about it because we don't want to step on anybody's toes. We're just veterinary students. We have really no say in what the profession should look like yet. We're like, I'm in my first year. You're in your second year. Like, you know, like you said, Mike, you know, you would just kind of want to finish vet school and then get your life started after that. So we were really afraid that we were going to struggle with creating this community, that nobody was going to be interested. And you know, it was just not going to be successful. But we decided to go public on Instagram on February of 2020. And that was prior to COVID-19 happening. And that was prior to the many social unrest events that happened in the US with George Floyd and all these movements. So once that happened, after we had launched, we all of a sudden got attention from all kinds of directions, like, oh, you guys are this organization representing Latinx people in veterinary medicine. Like, we never had that before. So we've been contacted by all these different AVMAs and organizations that, and different, you know, nonprofits within the veterinary space, asking for our opinion and to see if we had any resources that they could share. So all of a sudden, diversity and equity and inclusion like really blew up in veterinary medicine. It was needed. It was always needed, right? But after in 2020, after all that stuff happened, it just kind of just the spotlight was on that. So then that happened, and we just kind of blew up in that sense, right? So we were seen as this main resource. Even though we were just two veterinary students and we really didn't have any like credentials to go behind it, right? We didn't have any doctors part of it yet or anything like that. So that made us kind of accelerate everything. We created a website. We gathered a board of directors. We started, you know, programs and all this stuff. And now this is where we're at today. So now we have about 9 board of directors. They're all veterinarians in different parts of the industry. So we have small animal, large animal, people in pharmaceuticals, in research. We have a dean of a veterinary school in Long Island University. So we've gathered this amazing group, and we've had such positive feedback. And you know, now all these different corporations have reached out to us and sponsored us, and they really want us to see us succeed, right? They want the organization to have a very prominent say in our profession. They want us to represent. So that's kind of where we're at today, and we're really, really happy that, you know, it happened that way, and we're at the point that we are. And you know, as a veterinary student, it is incredible to see how far I think I've evolved in that short amount of time. But I feel like I'm where I belong, right? Like I'm right where I'm supposed to be. This is something that I'm really passionate about, and I put a lot of time and effort into it. So it has really changed my perspective on the veterinary industry and where I can go as a veterinarian. So I'm really excited on what's to come. I'm very open to new things coming my way.
Well, Juan, you said something. I mean, all that was great, but at the end you said you feel like you are where you belong. And that just made me smile so much. I had a question here to ask you about in your veterinary journey, discussing fitting in versus belonging. And so was that like, now you feel like you belong, was that always the case, or did it evolve into that?
No. From the start, I never felt like I belong in the profession, because I never saw myself reflected, right? I never saw anybody that was a prominent figure in the profession that I said, oh, that person looks like me, or they're Latino or whatever. So I never felt like I belong. And that's kind of what drove me to create this organization. I wanted to create a space, a community where people like me, individuals like me, can look to this profession and say, okay, there's this resource. There's all these people that we can look up to. There's all these programs like mentorship and scholarships and all this stuff that we can utilize to be a future veterinarian. So that is kind of what drove us to create this community, is the sense, the lack of belonging that we all felt, right? And it's really funny to see, not funny, but beautiful and funny and all these good things to see that now, since we've launched, you see a vast amount of veterinarians that are Latinx just on social media, sharing their journeys, representing through the organization. It's just amazing. And we've already fulfilled one of our goals through that, right? So, you know, I can tell you a little bit more about our mission and our pillars of empowerment if you want, but it just is all coming together in a very positive way for us.
Yeah. And I was looking on your website, and this stat shocked me. I was unaware of it. You said only about 5% representation in the veterinary community in sort of Latin, Hispanic. And it's going to be amazing to see you know, through your leadership and putting it out, how, where that number can grow to. Cause I can totally see how having someone like you to look up to and follow, you know, kind of clears the path and makes it maybe easier for others to follow.
Yeah. I mean, that statistic is kind of a loose statistic, right? There's never been like a research study that's really looked into the amount of Latinx specific people that are in the profession. So it is estimated to be at 5%, but it could definitely be lower. We don't know yet. And part of the organization, we want to fund a research project that eventually will do that and provide these statistics so people can see something tangible and kind of see where we stand and the importance of increasing diversity in our profession, right? You know, what we want to do, what we saw as veterinary assistants and veterinary technicians is that we saw a lot of Latinx pet parents that would go to veterinary clinics. They were unable to communicate their concerns, their feelings properly. And that really caused them to just not go to veterinary clinics anymore, not depend on the profession because they were embarrassed or they were thinking that people were going to think that they didn't love their animals because they couldn't afford certain things. So, you know, as a veterinary assistant, I came across that a lot. You know, I was utilized as a translator for most of my jobs that I had, and seeing how much my presence and my ability to connect with them in their native language changed their perspective on the profession and their perspective on and understanding of animal health was honestly the best feeling ever, right? As an individual, I'm like really having an impact even before being in the profession. So there is a huge need for us to be in the workforce because, like I said, a lot of Latin people own pets and there's a huge market there. Right. And for us to be able to opening our doors, our profession to these people is going to help us progress as a profession. And it's going to change the future of veterinary medicine in a very positive way. And that's kind of what we want. Right. We want to represent everybody that we serve, all the communities that we serve, not just a specific small community. And we want to change those stigmas also that just because you're from this area of the world or whatever, that you don't care so much about animal health. Well, no, it's the lack of education that they're exposed to because they go and they don't see somebody like them being a veterinarian, right? Like telling them exactly what the importance of a spay and neuter is or dental procedures or anything like that. So if they don't see that and they don't feel comfortable not seeing that, then how are they ever going to be able to get into, to access the profession properly, right? With and understand animal health. So that's changing quite a lot now. And part of the organization is we want to do a lot of outreach, community outreach, and we're translating, you know, basic information pamphlets like on vaccinations and preventatives from English to Spanish. So then our partner hospitals are able to just print that off of our website and share with their Latinx clients. And
yeah. Those resources we can find online. I know one of the clinics that I'm partnered in, we do have quite a contingent of Spanish speaking. Yeah.
Yeah. So on our website, it's being kind of reformed by Whisker Cloud, who is one of our corporate sponsors. And they are, they have done such a fantastic job with kind of taking our Wix website that we created ourselves and just making it beautiful and more user-friendly. And within that website, we will be able to have PDFs that anybody can access and print and share with their clients. And they have been translated by veterinarians and veterinary students that are Latinx that, you know, are all part of the process.
Kwan, well, I mean, this is amazing. You're doing phenomenal work. The impact you guys are having is incredible. We're going to be moving in here to our impact round. One thing from our pre-recording that I just wanted to mention, you had just kind of mentioned it nonchalant, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. You had said when there's no seat at the table for you, you just bring your own chair. And absolutely. I just thought that was amazing. And you keep doing that, and you do it with a smile on your face. And it's incredible to watch. So super honored to have you on as a guest. Just wrapping up, we're gonna fire you through our impact round here. So a series of questions. I think I know the answer to a few of them after our conversation. Question one, are you a cat or a dog person?
I'm definitely a dog person. I'm allergic to cats, so it's hard for me to be a cat person.
And what's your newest dog, just for everybody in the audience? What's your newest dog?
So we just got a Chiweenie, and his name is Duke.
A Chiweenie who's named Duke. I love it. That is fantastic.
He's going to have a complex his whole life.
Exactly.
Okay, true or false, this one's a slam dunk. I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a kid.
True. Yeah. Ever since, you know, I was a little boy in Colombia, I would actually bring in some stray animals and hide them in my closet and feed them. And my mom would come in and freak out and, you know, kick the animals out. And I would, you know, try to find homes for them. So absolutely, I've always wanted to be in this profession ever since I was very, very young.
Okay. How would your friends describe what you do for a living?
I would say stressful. All my friends that are not in the profession would probably say that what I'm doing is very stressful. And not only because it's just vet school is, you know, very demanding, but also because I'm somebody that likes to be involved in a lot, right? And I took on this organization. So my life is definitely not just school. It's kind of running an organization after school and putting a lot of time and effort in that. So it's stressful for sure.
I like that answer. We haven't had that before. Stressful. What is your favorite hobby?
Oh man, I have so many hobbies, but I would say, so I love weightlifting. That's honestly the way that I just kind of recharge, clear my mind, feel good about myself. And it's just, you know, it's just the best thing ever for me. Unfortunately, because of COVID, you know, we have not been able to go to the gym, but it's okay. I would say another hobby that's probably up there is traveling. I love to travel the world. So nice.
What in this world are you most grateful for?
Oh man, there are a lot of things, but I think I'm most grateful about my family, my parents. So my parents, you know, they left everything behind in Colombia and they didn't know the language and they left, you know, their professions. My dad was a politician and my mom was a textile designer. And then they just ended up working in very basic jobs. So I'm very, very grateful for my parents, because if it wasn't for them, then I wouldn't be where I am today.
Nice. Kaywan, well, thank you again so much. Jonathan, any final words here as we wrap up?
Other than being very impressed for both your audacious plans, stepping out and being willing to take something on where you see a gap, I'm really looking forward to post-vet school, where you both go with the Latinx community, as well as the impacts that you're going to make in veterinary medicine, because we need more of individuals like you within veterinary medicine that are not only looking at the problems, but also trying to identify solutions. And you're right at the cusp of that. You've already passed that cusp. You're already doing it. And I'm really excited to see what comes along throughout your career. Yeah. This is a great start to a conversation. And I hope a relationship.
Thank you so much. That means a lot, especially coming from you both. So I'm really happy that I was able to share that. And thank you for giving me the platform and the visibility that, you know, for my community and for my journey as a veteran student.
And for our listeners, Juan, if anyone wants to reach out and follow you or the Latinx community, where can they find you?
Absolutely. So I'm pretty present on social media. So I would say Instagram is probably the best. For my handle, it's just Juancho, the student vet. And Juancho is just a nickname I received when I was born in Colombia. So it just kind of helps me. I gives my identity, right? And then for the Latinx Veterinary Medical Association, just follow at Latinx Vet.
Okay, excellent. And we'll drop those in the show notes. All right, Juan, as always, the last word goes to you. What message do you want to leave for the veterinary community?
Yeah, so like I said, my father was a politician in Colombia, and I grew up with his slogan, one of his slogans all my life, and I really carried me through a lot of, you know, difficult moments. And his slogan was "Querer es poder," which means "Believe and you will achieve." So for me, when I can believe in myself and and believe in the things that I can do, I'm able to achieve.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please share the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.